Welcome back to the program. Certainly, if you ask most people about their satisfaction at work, the numbers prove to be pretty low. There is something going on in the workplace today, maybe as a result of the recent recession, or maybe just as a result of the way we are looking at work today and all the pressures that are upon us. We're going to talk about this today with my guest, Tony Schwartz. He is the founder and president of the Energy Project. He's been a reporter for the New York Times, an associate editor at Newsweek, and a staff writer for New York Magazine and Esquire. His previous books include What Really Matters, Searching for Wisdom in America, and The Power of Full Engagement, which he wrote with Jim Lehrer. It is my pleasure to have him here to talk about his latest work, The Way We're Working Isn't Working, The Four Forgotten Needs That Energize Great Performance. Tony Schwartz, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
When we look at the attitudes of most people in the workplace today, we find that a pretty significant majority of them tell us that they're not happy with going to work every day. What's going on?
Well, I think what's going on at the most basic level is simply the demand in people's lives is exceeding their capacity. You know, that doesn't really matter so long as, or I should say, your capacity is not an issue so long as the demand is not higher than what you have available in your gas tank, in your own gas tank. But, you know, between, you mentioned the recession, which has exacerbated everything, but then in addition, there is this unbelievable overload of information and connection and, you know, available interruptions and distractions. It's a function of the internet and of all the different technologies that we have now. And I think what's happened is that people just feel overwhelmed.
Is this a problem of our inability to cope with all of this new information and new technology? And do we simply have to retrain ourselves almost from a biological and evolutionary perspective? Or is there something that we profoundly need to change about work today, given these new additions and distractions?
Both. So we both need to change. Organizations need to change the way they manage people and what they expect from people, and individuals need to do exactly what you just said, which is they need to make some accommodations to a world that is so different than we've ever had before. And what, you know, the absolute number one thing that I would say we now require that we never did before is intentionality. You know, if you have 15 different things coming at you and you simply react to them, and you react to whatever feels most hot and most urgent, you may not be doing what really matters, and you may be getting overwhelmed in the process. So what we've lost here are boundaries and stopping points and finish lines. We have to consciously, intentionally, and systematically build those back into our own lives. We don't have infinite power in the workplace. Obviously, there are limitations to what we can do. So what we have to do is we have to give up, or I don't want to say give up, we have to ignore what it is we can't control, but really begin to assert our influence where we can. And, you know, there's a kind of a simple way of looking at this. We have gotten really, really good at understanding and gaining more and more mastery over the external world. And technology's actually helped us to do that. But what we haven't done is we haven't got an equal level of understanding and mastery over the inner world. And the inner world is actually, in effect, our operating system. And we have to upgrade the software in our operating system if we're going to meet the demands we're now facing. And so there is a whole different set of challenges. And really, in The Way We're Working Isn't Working, what I've tried to do is set out a group of strategies and solutions for people to manage in this entirely new world in a very, very specific and systematic way.
Is part of the problem that instead of trying to find this roadmap and adjust to the realities of the world today, that there is too much attention paid to complaining, essentially, about these realities as opposed to simply accepting them as value neutral, this is the way it is?
Hey, I like your sensibility. I mean, each time you're saying something, I find myself nodding my head in assent. Yes, here's the thing. Our whole core idea in The Way We're Working Isn't Working, and in the company I run, which is called The Energy Project, our idea is that the challenge now is not managing your time, because none of us have any available time left, but it's managing your energy, which is something you can both increase and you can regularly renew. But when it comes to energy, there are two things that can get in our way. One is if we don't have enough energy, and therefore we have to find ways to build our energy reserves. But the other is that we can waste energy, we can dissipate energy by focusing on things we can't control and by complaining about what's not working right. There are always things in our lives that aren't working right. So I share your instinct, which is we've got to jump in and put our energy into those things we can influence.
The other aspect of this is the portability of work today. The very fact that even if we get out of the office, we can be doing work on our BlackBerries, on our iPhones, when we're standing in line in the store or driving, although some people shouldn't. But the portability creates more stress in so many ways.
Well, there's no question, because you're always on. And, you know, that's like being in a endless marathon where you're constantly drawing down your reserves without ever refueling them. That's what I mean when I say we've lost our stopping points and our finish lines. The real key to being able to manage in this environment is to do what we're meant to do biologically, which is to pulse, to move between the expenditure of energy and the intermittent renewal of energy. And that's something that we've only got 50% of the equation. We're real good at spending energy, but we not only don't recover or renew our energy well, but we don't even respect the value of doing so. So we need to bring back into the workplace an understanding that renewal not only serves you personally as a human being, but it actually serves your capacity to be completely there when you're there. So the idea is not spend energy continuously over long periods of time. That's what a computer does, and we're not designed to operate like computers. What you really need to learn to do is to build a pulsing relationship between the spending and renewing of your energy throughout the day.
Of course, for some people, there's a certain pride that they take in that ability to go 12, 14, 16 hours at a stretch every single day.
Yeah, and it's called, you know, crazy. I mean, yes, indeed, people do take pride in that, but it's not serving them well. It's not serving their clients well. It's not serving their families well. That's just not the way in which we operate at our best. What you really want to be in life is fully engaged when you're doing whatever it is you're doing that matters, that's important. And if you're going 12 to 14 hours, by definition, you are in some way cheating on the spending of your energy. Or put it another way, what you're doing is you are conserving along the way. So imagine a marathon runner. If a marathon runner sprinted the first mile, what would happen? He'd collapse. So what we instinctively do when we're working 12 to 14 hours is we conserve energy along the way. We never fully engage. And so what you do is you get a person who is not really fully there at any time, but is always kind of partly there and partly not there. It's kind of a gray zone which serves neither work nor renewal very effectively.
What, if anything, are you seeing take place in the workplace today to begin to adapt to some of these realities that you're laying out?
Well, you know, we've gone in at the Energy Project. We've gone into a series of companies over the last 10 years and really, I think, done some quite remarkable things. Companies like Google, Apple, Ernst & Young, Sony Pictures, even Ford. And what we've done is we've really helped them to restructure what they expect from work, from people at work. So one of the big paradigm shifts that we need to make is it's not about the number of hours you work. It's about what you actually do during the hours you work. So it's not about quantity of time. It's about value produced. And so it really doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter to a manager or to a leader whether a person works this particular set of hours or that particular set of hours. What should matter is how effectively is that person doing the job I'm asking them to do. And we ought to treat employees like adults. And adults can make their own decisions. So you say to a good, you know, to a mature adult, listen, here's what I need. You figure out the best way for you to be able to deliver that. And that may mean stopping at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for an hour and a half and going and watch your kid's soccer game. or it may mean working out in the middle of the day, or it may mean working much more in the evening and not so much in the early morning because you happen to be a night owl. We need to give freedom in the workplace for people to do that. And in the absence of organizations' willingness to do that, we need to do as much of it for ourselves as we can, and I'm going to say this in a funny way, get away with. And by that I mean you need to find opportunities. Let me give you a really simple example. On our website, which is theenergyproject.com, we have a little video, which is an instructional video in how to breathe. Now, that seems like a sort of a silly thing to be teaching people. Supposedly, people know how to breathe. But what we do is we create a little breathing exercise that we have found is particularly powerful in effect, resetting people to a state of relaxation and calmness where they can be at their best. That breathing exercise can be done in as little as 30 to 60 seconds. And in the course of a very difficult day, doing it two or three times can be really effective in kind of creating a stopping moment during the day. Now, the good news is that you're never going to have a boss come up to your desk, no matter how tough the workplace is, and say, "Hey, I just caught you breathing. Don't do that anymore." So there are things we can do by ourselves. There are ways we can take back control of our lives. You know, next week, on June 23rd, we're launching a movement that we call Take Back Your Lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And again, people can go and look at takebackyourlunch.com, and they will see what we're talking about. We're trying to sort of get people to self-organize around the idea that they need to take back their lunch. They've given up their lunch. They're eating less than – the average American today takes less than 20 minutes for lunch and typically eats it at his desk or at their desks. Now, that's crazy. Why? Because you need time to both eat, to relax, to get outside, to reset, so that you can come back feeling more energized and more focused and more engaged. There are some very simple ways. I mean, interestingly, the federal government doesn't mandate that employers give people a lunch break, but as a practical matter, 20 states do, and as a practical matter, any business of any size officially gives people the right to a lunch hour. We've conspired with our employers not to take it. But it's if the 30 seconds or 60 seconds of breathing can help you reset the system, a 30-minute or a 45-minute or even a 60-minute lunch can be incredibly effective. And the key there is to understand that by taking that hour, during the subsequent 3 or 4 hours when you usually tend to be fading between, say, 2 and 6 or 3 and 7, you can actually come back full of energy and be much more productive during those hours than you would if you didn't take the lunch.
Talk about the ways in which you've seen this have a direct effect on productivity and on the bottom line for companies.
Well, the most profound example we have is Sony Pictures, where 3 years ago we went in. I have an article this month describing what we did in the Harvard Business Review. And the article is called, the perfect title, it's called The Productivity Paradox, How Sony Pictures Gets More Out of Employees by Demanding Less. So we went in 3 years ago and started working with their senior team, and then slowly worked our way down, cascaded this work we do, which is a curriculum, all the way down through every employee or virtually every employee in the company throughout the world, some 6,000, 6,500 employees. And, you know, in the middle of the recession, in one of the worst years that most companies have ever had, Sony had its biggest year ever, its highest revenue and its second highest profit. Now, there are a lot of variables that can account for that. And when you're in a creative business, you know, it's pretty hard to nail down that we did it, that it's our work that did it. But I think, again, on our website, we have a bunch of videos of these senior executives talking about their experience. I think there's very little doubt that what we did was we helped them to create a culture that was at the physical level encouraging renewal, and at the emotional level was encouraging leaders and helping leaders to become appreciative, because that positive energy is productivity positive, teaching them how to be more focused mentally, how to do one thing at a time instead of doing 15 things at the same time, and then to get connected to why it is they're doing what they're doing. Those are the four dimensions we work across: physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. All of those sources of energy are critical to being effective. None of them are sufficient by themselves. And what we did at Sony was to really help to change that culture so that when, putting it at really the bottom line, when people got there in the morning, they felt better about being there. And that's ultimately the most powerful thing you can do, is make a person feel like, I really want to be here doing this job. Because when something really matters to you, you bring more energy to it, more perseverance, more focus, and you're ultimately, in most cases, more successful.
You mentioned, we talked about the recession before, the impact that that's had in terms of not only increased workload, increased need for productivity because a lot of people have been laid off, but also in terms of the fear that it's generated.
Yeah, you know, fear is corrosive. If you think of Edward Deming was one of the great gurus of the workplace, and he said that fear is the single most insidious factor that can exist in a workplace. It's like a poison. When you're fearful, you move into fight or flight. You move into what we call the survival zone. And when you're in the survival zone, what you're concerned with above all else is your own survival. And therefore, you're less concerned with what's going on with other people, and you're certainly less concerned with whether your organization is okay. And what's happened in this recession is that people watch those next to them being laid off, wonder if they're going to be next, and become incredibly preoccupied with whether they're going to be okay. And then on top of that, they get the workload of that person next to them who was laid off dumped on them with the expectation they'll be able to do it. And because we don't really understand how to work effectively, what most people do is they push harder, they hunker down, they stay the course, they go from working 10 hours to working 12 hours or 14 hours. All of these things that ironically are actually burning them down and making them less effective. So in this environment, it's both pernicious, you know, it's taken a terrible toll, but it's also a wonderful opportunity. It's a wonderful opportunity for individuals, and it's a wonderful opportunity for organizations, because change, profound change, transformational change, really sadly only happens when people are in pain. Because otherwise you get numb and you start just, you accept what is and you just keep going. You complain about it in the way we talked about earlier, but you don't really do anything about it. When the pain gets great enough, that's when individuals and organizations say, I can't take it anymore. And I honestly believe we're at that moment. So the question is, can we seize that moment?
Does corporate America believe that we're at that moment? Is there enough pushback in terms of productivity and success for corporations to believe that these issues need to be addressed?
Well, it's a really good question. I'm going to say that the answer, if you went across all organizations in America, is no. We're not at that stage yet. The status quo is pretty strong, and there aren't a critical mass of organizations and of leaders of those organizations that have fully realized this. Having said that, the difference between our going into an organization and making the case that there is a better way of working and that the way we're working isn't working is so much easier for us today than it was when we started a decade ago. When we started a decade ago, it was really, really tough to convince people. Of course, we were in boom times, uh-huh. But we were also at an earlier stage. It was really difficult to convince people that the way we're working isn't working. Today, it's implicit. It's almost automatic. So if I say to, you know, if I say to somebody, the way we're working isn't working, I almost always get one of those nods of recognition, and that includes really very senior people. Now, I'm not going to say every senior person, but many senior people get it. Yeah, there's something wrong. It's the way you started this interview when you described what you were going to talk about with me. Something's wrong. Something's not working. And I think that understanding, that felt sense, is spreading quickly across organizations. So it's not the moment, and our best work, I mean, our best clients are clients in very, very progressive, forward-thinking companies. Mm-hmm. We don't do as well, I'm going to be brutally honest, we don't do as well in winning the hearts and minds of more traditional companies. But you know what? There is a thing called an early adopter, and the early adopters, the Googles and the Apples and the Sony Pictures and the and the Fords, those folks are going to lead the way, and they are going to have huge competitive advantage over the next decade or two because they've recognized that they have to move from trying to get more out of people, which has been the way organizations have operated for 200 years, to investing more in people so that they're freed and fueled and inspired to bring the best of themselves to work every day.
Talk about it from a generational perspective. As we move to less baby boomers in the workforce and newer and younger generations coming in, how is that impacting this?
It's a little hard. You know, there's a kind of an assumption. There's a party line on that question that's out there, which is that the millennials, the folks between say 20 years old and the early 30s, want more freedom, are less willing to be good corporate citizens, know that they're not going to work in the same place forever, have a more independent vision of the world, and therefore need to be treated differently by organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there's some of that. And I believe that that smart organizations are recognizing that this generation, this young generation, has a different set of expectations than their boomer bosses or parents. But what's happened, what's thrown a ringer into this, is the recession. And when it's one thing for a person who's 25 years old and early in their career to clamor for more freedom and more balance and to push back on the organization when the economy is good, and it's another when the economy is in the toilet. And so the freedom for young people to be able to express what they really feel has been compromised by what's going on in the recession. Smart companies are going to recognize that, like everything else, the economy is cyclic, and if they simply use the power of the fact that there are fewer jobs and people need them to push down the aspirations of young people, what they're going to lose are the best of those people. The best of that generation wants something different than their parents did, or their parents were willing to settle. Their parents are, the boomers are willing to settle at a certain point in return for things like security, and then they got used to having these lives and stopped pushing back. But I don't believe that the leading edge of this next generation is going to be nearly as willing to settle for being treated like cogs in a machine.
Of course, the other aspect of it is how difficult it is to change corporate culture and how long this is going to take.
Yeah, and that goes, yeah, sure, you're right. I mean, listen, I wake up every morning knowing that I'm fighting an uphill battle. And, I wake up with a lot of energy around it because I feel like it's a noble battle and that it has it has such fabulous potential for people and for organizations, and that if we don't do it, we're really screwed. But having said that, nothing changes easily, and cultures, which are more complex than individuals, change even more slowly and with more difficulty. I think that the biggest opportunity we have now, as I said earlier, is the pain, is organizations recognizing that they need to try something else, scary as it is. Change brings up resistance, which is why it happens so slowly and with such difficulty. So one of the things that happens when you begin to value an understanding of what's the inner life as opposed to just the outer life is that you begin to understand the factors better that are standing in the way of change. If you know that resistance to change is something that will inevitably arise every time you try to push at it, and if you get leaders who begin to be a little bit more introspective, a little bit more aware of how they're feeling and how their people are feeling, a little bit more tuned in to what's actually going on inside them, then I think you begin to shift the ground. Now, really, this is an evolutionary leap I'm talking about, that we're talking about, you and I are talking about. This is an evolutionary leap. The way we're working isn't working not only for organizations, but for the human race. We can't keep going more, bigger, faster. That's the ethic of the last 200 years. And it's fine until resources are clearly finite. The planet's resources are finite, and therefore if you go more, bigger, faster, you run into eventually a catastrophe. I mean, BP is a short-term example, but just the limits of oil as a energy source are another one. We can't use oil infinitely. You know what? The same thing is true for us as individuals. We don't have infinite resources. The evolutionary leap is to manage our own resources better. It's to recognize that it's not just about us. I mean, it's not just about me as an individual. It's about we as a culture, as a society. And if we don't start paying attention to the bigger picture, recognizing that our choices are influencing other people and will come back to influence us, we're not going to make it. So we have an imperative here that's pretty urgent.
Of course, a lot of people will say that if we don't go more, bigger, faster, the Chinese will or somebody else will.
You know, listen, I mean, you imagine two people standing on the street, and one guy's holding a gun and says, I'm going to shoot as many people as it takes to gather all the money and all the power to me, and the other guy says, you know, I'm going to look for a different solution because I don't think that's one that's going to work, and I'm going to have to try to figure out a better way of doing this. You know, you can go into, a major city in China right now and see the costs of trying to go more, bigger, faster at supersonic speed. I mean, these cities are polluted and they are overcrowded and they are, the working conditions are horrifying. I don't see that as a reason not to rethink the way we live. The United States has always been a leader in the free world. It's been a long way from perfect, but it's been a leader in the free world in thinking about how best to manage the world we live in. So I'd hope that the United States, would set the model, would be the example of where we need to go, regardless of what the Chinese or the Indians, or any other culture decides to do, or country decides to do.
And are these ideas that have their best application for kind of creative businesses, or is this really across the board?
So, you know, I've been sharing a whole series of ideas with you, and you've really taken me on quite a ride here from, you know, starting at the physical level, and now we're up there at the spiritual level. I think the early adopters do tend to be the more progressive companies, the more creative companies, the ones that are used to pushing the edges, that are more willing to take risks, that, you know, are trying to break barriers. So there's no question that those kinds of companies are the ones who are going to be the first to adopt this. But the principles I've been talking to you about today are fundamental universal principles, you know, the principle that we are designed as human beings to move between spending and renewing energy. That's a universal principle. It doesn't apply more to someone at Google than it does to someone at Procter & Gamble. We've done our work at, you know, the Los Angeles Police Department. We've done it at hospitals. We've done it in schools. We've done it all over the world. We found, you know, when we go into Johannesburg or Barcelona or Tokyo, there is no less receptivity to what we're talking about there than there is here, because at a primal level, at a basic level, human beings respond instinctively to what feels right. So in the long run, I don't think there's any distinction between which kinds of companies can carry this ball, but in the short run, it is going to be the more progressive companies that are going to have to kind of create the they're going to have to be out front and create build the critical mass that finally pushes it over in the right direction.
Tony Schwartz, the book is The Way We're Working Isn't Working, The Four Forgotten Needs That Energize Great Performance. It's just out from Free Press. Tony, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you very much.